My name is Patrick Stewart, and welcome to the Taoist Online Podcast, also called the Taoist Corner Podcast. I'm your host. I am the founder and chief editor of the Taoist Online. Also, Project Jade, which we just released this week. Project Jade is a curated selection of our articles. The Taoist Online is a medium.com publication where we publish about 15, 20 articles a day covering many forms of philosophy, religion, and spirituality, mindfulness, all the above, personal stories, life journeys, and that's what we do. But we were founded in about February 2023, so we are relatively new. We'll celebrate our first year here in February. If you don't know what Taoism is, it is an ancient Chinese philosophy slash religion started by a legendary man named Lao Tzu, whose name translates into literally wise man or wise old master. He wrote this book called The Tao Te Ching. He was fed up with life in ancient China and all the wars of the warring states and decided he wanted to live out the rest of his days on the countryside. And a border guard stopped him on the way out of town and asked him to spend the night and write down all of his words of wisdom that he had gathered throughout the years. And that's where the Tao Te Ching comes from. So what we do every Sunday is we look at this other book, 365 Tao, A Daily Meditation Guide by Dingming Dao, where we try to relate ancient philosophy to a more modern life, which is what Dingming Dao is really good at. Rather than kind of lecture with terms and translations and Chinese phrases and concepts, he simply looks at our lives and then tries to see how we would live them in accordance with the natural flow of the universe, which is what Tao more or less is. It is the natural path that all existence is going to follow. Not that you have to, right? You still have free will in the Taoist way of life, of course. But things get easier when you do live in harmony with those around you. So let's get going. What we're going to do is we read each chapter, which is really short, starts with a small poem, and then we talk about it. Okay, we're on chapter 72, Discovery. Seize the mountain spirits, make them divulge their secrets. Only with strength is there discovery. The scriptures say that the mountains contain answers. Generations of seekers have gone into the wilderness and have encountered spirits both benevolent and terrible. Though the possibility of great discovery is mixed with the threat of misadventure, we must all go into the mountains and seek these answers. We should understand that these mountains represent the unknown aspects of our own minds. Meditation is a process of discovery, of slowly exploring how you function as a human being. Through walking in the vastness of this land, you can resolve the problems of your psyche and seek the treasures buried in your soul. Like actual mountain exploration, this process is not without danger. Failure means falling into insanity and obsession. Success is to find treasures without comparison anywhere in the world. People ask, is meditation necessary? If you want to explore the innermost parts of your mind and ascertain who you really are, there is no more ideal method. Mere introspection is not deep enough, and psychological counseling will not necessarily bring you face to face with all parts of yourself. Only the depth and solitude of meditation can help you learn everything. Discoveries are there. We need only enter the mind to find them. Indeed. I get asked the same question. Is meditation necessary? Like, do we have to meditate? You know, can I just write in my journal? Can I go for a walk? Like, can I and just be a nice, kind person? And the answer is kind of no. No, like you do really need to find an activity that allows you to calm your mind and look internally, whether that's sitting still, whether that's going for a long, quiet walk, sitting in a park. Maybe it's doing an activity that helps you really, really focus. But it needs to be something that you can turn your mind inward. And that type of self-cultivation, self-analyzation takes time. It's not something you can do in just a minute or two, right? It's not enough to sit there and write one story or article one time and then be like, well, I'm done. That was great. And he even mentions a problem with going to like a counselor or a psychological therapist, right? A lot of that is, you know, them hearing what you have to say and then kind of steering you into certain directions, right, based on what you said. But even if that's only once a week or, you know, once every other week, or even especially if it's once a month, that's not enough. Like, daily meditation practice is so important for everyone to start doing, to really examine your life piece by piece as you go and really reflect on, you know, the choices you've made and what you have to do today, and then how you think those are going to play out in the future. It's not that you're not, and I want to be careful to say, you don't need to stress out about the past or the future. It's not regret of the past. It's just looking at it to see, did those dots connect leading me where I am now, and then trying to prepare yourself for what might come in the future, without allowing that to absolutely take over your mind. But yes, it is definitely needed. So if you're not practicing, I hope you are. I hope you start. I hope you start practicing. Stand at the precipice. Yes. Chapter 73 is affirmation. Stand at the precipice, that existential darkness, and call into the void. It will surely answer. The precipice represents our dilemma as human beings, the sense that this existence is all too random, all too absurd. Is there order? Is there a force directing things? There are important issues, so important that we cannot rely on scripture, but must instead explore on our own. The followers of Tao compared the void to a valley. A valley is void, yet it is productive and positive. The emptiness of the valley permits water to accumulate for plants. It allows life-giving sunlight to flood its surface. Its openness gives comfort to people and animals alike. The void should not be frightening. Rather, it contains all possibilities. Peer into it. Call out, not just with your voice, but with your whole being. If your cry is deep and sincere, an echo is sure to return. This is the affirmation of our existence, the affirmation that we are on the right path. With that encouragement, we can continue our lives and our explorations. Then the void is not frightening, but a constant companion. Words of affirmation, the love language. Let's see. My love languages are touch and quality time. If you don't know what I'm talking about, go search for the love languages quiz and take that online. But affirmations. Typically, when we hear the words of affirmation, we think about, you know, people talking you up, right? Oh, how good you are. Oh, you did such a good thing. Oh, good job. Those are, that's affirmation, right? That's how affirmation plays out in our life. Here, I would say he takes a more metaphorical approach to the word affirmation. It's that echo, right? The emptiness is your affirmation. Not that there's nothing, but that there is everything. Okay, so what do I mean? He uses a great example where, you know, if Tao is a valley, so in between two mountains, the space in between is called a valley. And that valley is super helpful. It's the absence of that mountain that allows animals, water to gather. Usually a valley is very rich with life and plants and, you know, maybe a stream, because all that water rains down the mountains and comes down into the valley and gets lots of nourishment. Much like the Tao, you know, when we look into ourselves or we contemplate what comes after our current life, it may feel like nothing. But just like if we were in an airplane very high up and we saw these two mountains, it'd be very easy to think that there was nothing in between the valley or in the valley, because we can't see it because we're up in this airplane. So too are we now. We are in one state and we are unable to see kind of through those clouds into the valley. But as he says, if you peer into it and call out, not with your voice, but with your whole being, you will hear that echo, right? That reverberation, that affirmation that something is there and that it's not to be afraid of that emptiness, right? It doesn't represent bad. It represents all possibilities, right? When you are unbound by your limited form, then anything is possible. Think about it another way. If I built a giant box of wood and brick, the doors and the emptiness inside are what make it a house, right? It's just a solid piece of wood. I can't do anything with that. But if I empty it out, then I can go inside, I can live in it, I can cut holes in it and make a window and see outside. So it's the emptiness of that block that makes it amazing. Now we should appreciate that block, that uncarved wood, that uncarved piece for its potential, but it really becomes, it takes on new shape and new possibilities when we uncarve it, when we dig in, right? And really get into the, as we say in the South, the meat and potatoes of it all. Another great example from, I believe it's Zhuangzi, is like a pot, right? You have a clay mold and you empty the middle of it out, then it can be a bowl. It can hold water, it can have a plant. So it's the emptiness of that bowl that makes it a pot, that makes it who it is, which is a strange concept to kind of understand, right? Like, how can the absence of something make it more, I don't want to say useful, but, you know, you're these things are defined by their emptiness, right? Like, and so too is the Tao, right? The Tao is defined by its emptiness, by its ability to be and do everything, right? That's really what they're getting at here, right? That's what the affirmation is trying to teach you, is that you should feel, you should feel safe when there is nothing, right? Because when there is nothing, there is everything. When you don't know what to do on a Friday night, the world is your oyster. You can do anything you want to, right? And that's a special place. That's a good place to be. Okay, chapter 74, accumulation. An opening in the storming sea, gold deposited on bones. Once accumulation has begun, take care not to interfere. There is a fable about a pious man whose father had just died. A geomancer instructed the son to bury his father at the mouth of a sea cave. The sea opened at this spot once only in 100 years, and the family who utilized it would experience great fortune. Although he had misgivings about the unorthodox location, the son threw the casket into the waters at the indicated time. For weeks, the son doubted what he had done. He eventually went to a competing geomancer, who, out of jealousy, advised the son to raise the casket. The son did so. When the coffin was brought up and opened, the man saw that a fine layer of pure gold had already been deposited on the father's bones, a clear indication of the auspicious transformation that had begun. In regret, the son wanted to throw his father back in, but it was too late. There was no remedying what had been done. Spiritual practice must be uninterrupted. We may be anxious because we see very little happening on a daily basis, but we must be patient until we can see what the accumulation of our efforts yield. Self-cultivation means steady, gradual progress. To stop prematurely would be more disastrous than never having started at all. So this goes back to spiritual practice and meditation, and how important it can be. If you begin to meditate on a regular basis and you see the growth that is happening, the spiritual transformation that is coming, if you get nervous or anxious about, you know, maybe you are worried you're becoming a new person, or maybe you're worried how this is going to affect people around you, or maybe you're worried that you're going to turn into some emotionless musk of a person. Yeah, those are natural feelings. But you can't let that stop you on your journey, right? Like the man who buried his father, such a strange story. But he pulled him up and there was a little bit of gold, but when he threw him back in, that was it, right? It can only be done once. Because remember, he had to be buried at a certain time once every 100 years. So he lost it. He lost his chance to be very rich. So too are we. If we lose the practice, if we give up on that practice, even if we start it again later, we lose the what we could have become, right? There's no telling what we could have been now, because we can't go back and relive the past, right? And that's not to regret our actions, right? But it is important to dedicate yourself and then continue that dedication. If you, how do I say this? Let's say you wanted to play basketball. And so you train, you play basketball, and you could, okay, right? You play for like a year and you're like, oh, that's cool. And then you're like, you know what? I'm really good now. I'm just going to sit here and not really train. I'll just play, you know, every now and again. About a year later, you're like, you know what? I want to play again. And you realized, oh man, I'm terrible at this basketball. Everybody around me has gotten way better. And even if you start training again, you've lost that time where you could have been honing your skills. And no matter how much you train, there's always that lost time that you did not progress, right? You lost that progression. And that's what this story is getting at. It's not to say you shouldn't pick up your practice again. It's just pointing out that when you stop that practice, like, it needs to be continuous. It, just like we were talking about in the previous chapter, right? It has to keep going, and often, right? Once a week, once a month, that's not enough, right? You're not going to grow spiritually into who you can be if it's not extremely often. Every day is what I would recommend, strongly recommend, every single day. Nani says, I'm learning how to build or how to deal with it a bit better through therapy. Yeah, therapy is helpful. I'm not saying these things are not helpful. I'm not saying you shouldn't go to therapy if you need it. But definitely do. I know tons of people who have made great progress in therapy. But with that therapy needs to come self-reflection. Like, if you, it's like I was raised in a Christian church. And they used to tell me, you know, you're not a good Christian if you're only going to church once a week, right? Like, don't be the hot and cold Christian. Like, you're hot on Sundays and you're cold every other day of the week. Yeah, and to some degree, like, I get it. Right now, you know, I'm old enough, and now I understand that you really have to think about it. You really have to turn that inward. Daily practice is so helpful. Yeah. Okay, 74, accumulation, an opening in the storming sea, gold deposited on bones. Oh, no, wait, we just read that. Chapter 75, breakthrough, lake shadows, color of cold, willow branches weep ice, swan rises dazzling in the sunlight. After long self-cultivation, one's accumulated energy reaches a threshold and then bursts out full, breathing and vibrant. Without the careful building of momentum, this moment of release would never have been possible. With long years of preparation and experience, the freeing of the soul will not be mere dissipation, but will be so strongly focused that it lifts one into a higher state of awareness. When one's spiritual energy emerges, it feels like a swan rising from the water. Once you have reached this level of stored energy, you will be a different person. On one hand, you may take genuine comfort in the point of attachment, of attainment that you have made. On the other hand, you now see all the other possibilities that remain for you to explore. With the emergence of great possibilities comes the need for responsibility. If you diverge from your life's path in order to explore new vistas, remember how far you are flying and remember to return at the proper times. Only you can decide how to arrange your life. Once you are a strong flyer, you must still use wisdom to direct your flight. Okay, so back to the journey of meditation and practice. I love how these chapters seem to group themselves. Usually in like groups of four or five, they seem to all cover in a similar vein, and then you kind of move on. But yeah, breakthrough. There are some philosophies that really think that you obtain this enlightenment, right? And I think that here in the West, especially because of media and, you know, movies and TV shows, that you become like this crazy spiritual, like the light hovers above you and you don't feel emotions anymore, and somehow you're just gonna make it work. And that's not real. Like, it's not for me. I mean, never no one I've ever seen, right? Like, I've never walked around and seen people with shining lights over their heads unless it's a light bulb. But it doesn't mean you don't reach a new state of awareness in your current life. Through daily practice, through your meditations, through your movements, right? If you practice Qigong or Tai Chi, you can begin to see things around you that you wouldn't normally have noticed. And let me give you an example. When I was in college, I was a communications major. I took a lot of debate classes. I learned how to speak. I learned how arguments work. I learned how to break down sentence structure into, you know, valid or invalid arguments and statements. And the more I trained on it, the longer that training went on. For 3 years, I began to see politicians use their words to manipulate, right? And you even take that a step further into the relationships that I had, and you begin to, my friends or my, you know, the people I was seeing, and you begin to kind of break down what they're saying as well. And you learn how to counter that, right? You can counter what they say. And that's, on one hand, that was super cool because I could win most arguments. But on the other hand, it was really frustrating for the people around me, right? But to prove the point, you do reach this other awareness, right? I could see things I didn't notice before. I could interject myself in the conversations that I couldn't before because I did that daily practice. I did that self-cultivation in order to instinctively, there's the key, to instinctively move without thinking about it, to verbalize without thinking about what I was going to say. It just came naturally. Ah, breakthrough, right? I was meeting with my Taoist teacher, George Thompson, last week, and we talk a lot about, instinctiveness and that intuitiveness. That's really the goal of your spiritual practice, right? When you have these breakthroughs, it's not practice anymore. You just are living your life in this new arena, right? Take breathing exercises, for example. If you practice breathing every single day, let's say when you go to bed, when you wake up, when you have 15 minutes at work, you know, maybe you set an alarm. I know the Apple Watch has that, like, you know, alert to breathe like every hour or something. That practice will inherently become intuitive. And when it's natural, that's the breakthrough. That's you reaching a higher level, right, of awareness. In fact, you know, in my practice, I think it was probably a few months ago, after a year and a half of daily breathing exercises, trying to go to bed, that it became natural. Like, I noticed through self-meditation, through cultivation, that when I was getting angry, I was breathing. Like, I was naturally slowing down my breath, trying to keep my voice lower, trying to speak slower, and that didn't happen before. That's the progress you want, right? That's the attainment, moving on to that next level. So I'm not like a monk, right? I'm not some crazy guru person, right? Like, I'm still a dad. I'm still a husband. I go to work every day. I do things. I mess up. I make mistakes. I get angry. But there is now a newness to me that I can use going forward, right? That's the breakthrough that this chapter is talking about. And that's the breakthrough you can have too. This isn't just a me saying I'm not special. I'm nobody. I'm just some guy, okay? Like, I'm just some guy in Texas talking online. So you can do it too. If I can do it, oh my gosh, surely you guys can do it, because, man, I don't know what I'm doing half the time, right? I'm just a guy. My house is a zoo. I can't even get my kids to clean their rooms. So if I can do this, you guys can do this. Okay. Chapter 76, Sanctity. Every soul is inviolable. Any thought can be private. The deepest goal is to find sanctity's source. The body may be ravaged and hacked into pieces, but the mind may never be invaded. It is only when we permit others to influence us that our minds may be entered. Evil may thrive on enslaving us physically, emotionally, or mentally, but it can do so only by deception. That is why we must remember the sanctity of our own souls. Our thoughts are private. As long as we are determined, evil cannot sway us. People think that others can read our minds or that the gods watch every movement. No master, no psychic, no god can enter our inner gate if we choose not to let them in. By withdrawing into the sanctity of our souls, we can also know ourselves. This effort cannot be carried forth by others. It can only be accomplished through self-effort or living and engaging in ongoing contemplation. Only when we can enter the most sacred core of our beings and find the secrets of life. You know, there's a saying that nobody can ever know who we truly are. Ever heard that? That when you're alone and you're in a room and you're left with your thoughts, that's truly who you are. But every time we open our mouths and we speak to someone, we're kind of putting on a hat, right? We're putting on our, for me, it's, you know, my father hat, my husband hat, and my friend hat at work. It's the manager hat, the employee hat. So no matter what happens, you know, every time we speak, it's never truly us. And there's a lot of truth in that, right? I mean, there are thoughts that you're lying in bed and you think something and you're like, oh, and where'd that come from? Good thing I didn't say that out loud, right? Don't say the quiet parts loud, guys. But yeah, this chapter is really getting at that concept that, you know, your soul, your true self is yours alone. That no God, no spirit, no evil, you know, no person can ever reach that place inside your mind because it's impossible, right? It just is. That place where you go when you meditate, that feeling you have inside you, that's what this book will describe as your soul, right? Your true nature. And through self-cultivation, through meditation and Qigong, that's what you're training at that point. So when I grew up in a church, I think one of my pastors told me that, you know, wherever your heart is, your actions will follow, right? Wherever your mind is, your actions will follow. So if you can adjust your mind, everything else will come from that, right? And that's what meditation is trying to do. And you can't do that through your mouth, because just like I said earlier, when you speak, you're putting on a hat. Even if you're a writer, when you write, that's another hat, right? You're expressing things knowing other people are going to read them. And that has, even if it's a small effect, it does have an effect on you. It does cause you to think, well, what do they expect me to say? What should I not say, right? Am I going to lose readers if this happens? Yeah, I do it all the time. When I write in public, and that's super scary. That's really scary sometimes. Like, how open should I be? Right? Is my mom going to read this? I hope not. But yeah, that's the inner you that you're trying to affect in meditation. Nani says, that's one of the things that are bringing me to learn more about Taoism. I want to learn more about myself and how to fit into the world in a way that's more natural and not forced. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Right? That's what Taoism is all about. I said it early on, but Taoism is really the belief that there is a natural state inside you, that inside all of us, that we, if we can connect to it, if we can allow that natural us to come out, or soul, if we can connect to that soul, we can live a more naturally flowing, happier, calmer life. Think of it like, I love this example, it's my favorite example, but you know, pretend you're like tossed overboard from a boat and you're going down this river, right? And you're just like, ah! You have two choices. You can either exert a lot of energy, immediately fight against that current and get to the side, or you can allow that river to carry you and then gently, saving your energy, move and flow and get out. All right. Now, you got out in both examples, but I mean, I know which one I'm going to choose. If I have to choose one, like, I'm going to choose the second one, where I save energy. I don't panic. You know, I don't cause myself to drown in this river, potentially. I just calmly reflect on my surroundings and move. You know, maybe that river's going to carry me, right? But man, I sure do feel better at the end of option number two, right? That's like Taoism in a nutshell. Just finding who you are in your center and letting that carry you, right? Letting that flow out of you. And people will notice, I promise. Like, when you can really self-cultivate and get inside, and when that inside starts to flow out from you, people will notice. They'll ask about it. Oh man, you seem really chill. Like, you're a pretty easygoing guy, or, you know, whatever they say. That's true. People can see it through your eyes, through your actions. And there's something special about, I hate using the word soul, because everyone's going to think of like the Christian soul. That's not what it's getting at. So try not to make that connection. But yeah, your soul is a special place, and only you can get in touch with it, right? Only you can train and cultivate and express it. Okay. Chapter 77. Fate. Dispel time and you will dispel fate. That's it. That's a short poem. Okay. Fate is the force that interferes with our lives, wrecking things at the worst moments. Yet what we call fate is nothing more than the consequence of our own actions. Each time we act, we generate a chain of events that is tied to us completely. The faster we run from these links, the faster they follow us. They cannot be severed. Our every act binds us further. The operative element here is time. The events of the past are the curse. Beginning followers of Tao learn to manipulate past, present, and future. They learn how circumstances operate and seek to take advantage of that. More advanced followers of Tao eschew this process of manipulation. They obliterate all regard to past, present, and future as definitions in order to negate the concept of fate. In order to attain a state of being where there is no past to weigh upon the present and no future to be determined, followers of Tao must reach a profound merging with Tao. The follower then acts no differently than Tao would. There is no fate to oppose them, for they are existence. They are causality. They are Tao itself. Okay, this is an interesting one. Let's ask the question in a different manner. If Tao is everything, and Tao is the flow of the universe, does that mean that I have no choices? Right? Like, let's go back to the girl swimming in the river example from last chapter. Am I in the river? Yes. Am I being carried by the river? Yes, that flow of time does continue regardless of my actions. But does that mean I don't have a choice? No, I have plenty of choices. I can swim against the current. I can swim to the side. I can swim and float downstream. I guess I could just hold my breath a really long time and see where it goes. I could take a big gulp and just call it quits, right? I have plenty of choices. That's not determinism, right? That wouldn't really be what I call fate, right? And beginner Taoists ask those questions all the time, right? That I can just do whatever I want, and that's Tao, right? That I can hurt anybody I want to. I can be mean and cruel, and that's Tao. Oh, you know, live and let Tao. That's not what Taoism teaches. Intrinsically, we believe that the soul, that the Tao treats everything equally. And if you're cruel and jealous or you're hurtful to others, that's obviously not treating everyone the way Tao treats everyone. The Tao treats everyone like water treats all living things. Let's say a murderer and a saint were standing next to each other and they drank from the same water. The murderer would get just as much nourishment as the saint. The murderer's body will take in that water. The water will be good for him. It will refresh him. Same as the saint. You know, the water is not going to be like, oh, sorry, I can't help you because you did a bad thing. You did something I believe is bad. So, nope, no nourishment for you. Too bad. And then the saint, it was like, oh, cool. You helped a bunch of people. Well, I guess you can keep on drinking, right? That doesn't make any sense. Nature isn't like that, right? I mean, look at history for kings who did horrible, horrible things, and they had lush, you know, prosperous land and food and, you know, rain and all the time. And this, I mean, a great kingdom, but they were awful, awful. They did terrible things to people. And in the Tao, that's the same thing, right? The Tao is the same way. It treats everyone equal. So when we get to this paragraph here, which says, beginning followers of Tao learn to manipulate past, present, and future, right? So you look at these constructs and you connect those dots and you think, okay, well, if I see where I've been through meditation, I can control where I'm going in the future. And that's definitely not true. I don't know if you guys have noticed, but life is crazy. Like, things just happen. You can't possibly see and connect all the dots. If you're trying to connect all those dots, that's a fool's errand. Think about it this way. The Earth is somewhere around like 1.5 billion years old, right? As far as we know. So I need you to think about everything that happened for 1.5 billion years to get you where you are today, listening to my voice right now. Like, what if you ate breakfast at a different time today? Would you listen to me tomorrow? What if your parents hadn't met? What if they hadn't been at the same place at the same time? Would you be here? You You know, maybe you'd be someone else. Maybe you'd be in another country that doesn't have internet access. You can't possibly understand the many, many trillions and trillions of actions that are happening all the time. And those consequences, that causality, is what this chapter is calling fate. So it's not that somebody plans something out and you have to follow this, right? Like a destiny. But there is a fate coming for all of us, right? Those actions have consequences, and those consequences cause other things, and then those have consequences. So as you begin down this road, it's important to remember that you can't control what happens. And eventually you'll get to this spot in your awareness and your Taoist journey that you lose the ability to kind of grasp the past, present, and the past and the future, right? There is no past. There is no future. It's only today, right? And worrying about yesterday is called regret. Worrying about tomorrow is called anxiety. And to rid ourselves of these two negative thoughts and emotions, we focus purely on right now, right? That's kind of the next step as you go along this Taoist journey, is you realize that fate is today. Because when we know all of our actions are going to kind of breed consequences we can't possibly understand, fate becomes day. Fate is your actions right now. And those are the ones you can control, right? Those are the ones you can focus on and take care of. The people around you right now, those are the ones that are going to, the way you treat them will determine your fate. The way you treat yourself, the way you practice, that is you and your fate together at the same time. Oh, I hope that makes sense. I hope that works out. Okay. We'll do one more. Chapter 78. This one is called Fear. Trust the gods within. Accept given boons. Illusion is reality's border. Pierce fear and go beyond. In your meditations, you will meet gods. These gods are nothing more than the holiest aspects of your own mind. They are not other beings. Your inner gods will grant gifts of knowledge and power. Accept what comes your way without doubt and fear. You can trust your gods. They will never betray you, for you cannot betray yourself. Such trust dissolves fear and regret. You will find a resolution to your inner conflicts. The gods will direct you forward to the very border of reality itself. On the other side is vast profundity, the ultimate nature of existence. But the border can be crossed only if you have resolved all fear and regret. All fear comes from our sense of self. When we understand at the border of reality, we are afraid that we will lose our identities by plugging in. We are afraid of being destroyed. But we came from Tao in the first place. We are Tao. To return to Tao is not to be negated, but to become one with the entire universe. True, we will no longer be who we are now, but we will be one with Tao. In that state, there is no need for fear. Oh, so the fear of death, right? I think is what this is getting at. It's, on one hand, the fear of death is very natural, right? All living creatures want to exist, right? I mean, that's the point, right? The point of existence is to, biologically speaking, is to continue, right? Continue the species, continue the population, continue yourself, right? Everything in continuation. But we all also know that this form of existence is temporary. We were with Tao only at one point. We are still with Tao, but in a different form. And one day, we will return to our previous form. That's not scary. It's natural. It's the way it is. There's no need to fear that next form because we've already been there. And we weren't afraid before. And we shouldn't be afraid after. I like in this chapter where it talks about through meditation, you meet gods. I thought the same thing. I used to talk to a couple of Christian friends of mine, and they would all be like, well, I heard God speak to me in my prayer. And I would say, what? Did he really speak to you? Like, or is it just what you say, right? Are you just conditioned to say that because you put yourself in a meditative place, you thought about what was happening, and you were able to come to a realization internally through your own mind. And I think that's more true than I heard a voice come from all around me that was some extraterrestrial, extra spiritual being. I think it's very, very possible, very true, that when you focus yourself and focus your mind and focus your spirit, you will come to conclusions. You will come to realizations. That is a very real thing. Whether you want to call it prayer, whether you want to call it meditation or whatever, right? That is true of all religions, of all faiths, of all philosophies. They all come to the same conclusion that when you focus yourself, you will find and hear options, if you will. I find that really interesting. And the chapter goes on to say, you know, sometimes when you hear those voices, when you hear what's going on, when you come to those conclusions, you are scared. Right? Did I come to the wrong conclusion? Did I second guess myself? You know, am I just rambling on inside my head? And that's not going to lead to bad things, or it's going to lead to bad things, to wrong things. You know, and as we just discussed, you can't connect those dots, right? Going forward, like it's you can barely connect them going backwards, maybe only a few steps, but not the trillions of steps it took to actually get you here. So, you know, you can't connect going forward either. So that fear that lies in the future, you can let go of, right? You can. We just talked about the sanctity of your soul in the previous chapter. You can have faith and trust that when you cultivate, that those are, that's Tao, right? That emptiness inside of you that you reach, that's being in, fully in Tao. At that moment, when that flow comes out of you, have faith that that is where you are being led. Excuse me. And all fear, right? That fear comes from our sense of self. It goes on to say, when we stand at the border of reality, we are afraid that we will lose our identities by plugging in, right? We're afraid to let go. We're afraid of, you know, destroying ourselves. But that's okay, right? We did not have a self. So if we destroy ourselves internally, even externally at some point, we are simply returning to that natural state, right? And that's not something to be ashamed of That's not something to be afraid of. That's where we work. It's where we are. That's where we're going. So very natural. Don't be afraid. All right. That's it for this week. We will pick up next week with chapter 79, spring, something that we haven't felt here in Texas, or we won't be feeling for a couple of months. January is typically the coldest month of the year, so we're headed towards ice, maybe snow, and then eventually we get to spring. I wonder what that's a metaphor for. We'll see. We'll see next week. Again, I'm going to have to edit out all the microphone problems and false starts at the beginning. But hey, you can find this podcast on Apple. You can find it on Spotify. You can go to thedaoistcorner.net and subscribe there. This is my Substack. You can go to thedaoist.online, read all of our articles. And of course, coming in January, you have Project Jade, which is a curated collection of special articles taken from the Taoist Online. So thank you very much. I hope you've enjoyed this episode, and I hope to see you guys again next week. And oh yeah, don't forget, you can always watch us, watch me live every Sunday morning at 9 a.m. Central Time on the YouTubes, or hey, just listen later. Thank you guys. Bye.